So we're going to move on to effort, which is the fourth perfection. Patience was number three, okay? And you had a quick review of patience. It normally takes about a year and a half straight to teach that patience chapter, but you did it in three nights. And now it's time to move on to effort. Pashin. Tsunduki. Pashin. Tsundu means effort. Ki means of. And Pachin means Parotuchimba, which means the paramita or the perfection. So this is the perfection of effort. And it's the fourth perfection. The opening lines of this chapter say Lungme Yoa Me. Okay? Lungme Yoa Me. Lung in the high tone with the head letter means wind, and it can mean physical wind, like the wind coming from a fan, or it can mean inner wind, like the psychic or the spiritual energies moving through the body, through the spiritual body, and that's called lung. For example, when you meditate the wrong way, or you meditate too hard, you don't go into it the right way, you get lung. A lung condition. And lung condition is called lung for short. And you start feeling nervous, you can't sleep, your body starts to shake. And this is the function that lung, it's qi in Chinese, and that's the function that lung has in your body. It's the energy moving through your fundamental spiritual body inside. Okay? Lung me means without lung. Okay, lung me means without wind. Yoa means for something to flicker, or for something to move like that, like the word for earthquake is sayom, you know, which means that the earth goes like this. So yoa means like if you blow on a candle flame and it goes like that, that's called yoa. Okay, yoa me means it doesn't flicker. And this is in the opening lines of the chapter on effort. It says, without wind, nothing flickers. Without wind, nothing flickers. Okay. And Gyaltsa J and Master Shantideva himself explain it as meaning, without effort, without the perfection of effort, you can't do merit. Okay. Without effort, you can't. You'll never do merit. And then Gyaltsa J goes into a bit of an explanation of that. And I thought it'd be nice to go into that. I think this is very charged. I think this line is very, very profound. In the highest teachings of Buddhism, in the secret teachings, it's very significant that without wind, there would be no fire. You know, there would be no movement of the fire without wind. And I can't go into it because it's secret. But it's very, very profound. He's talking about the creation of your enlightenment. He's talking about the creation of a Buddha's body and a Buddha's mind in this little line here. He says, without wind, the candle can't flicker. The flame won't flicker. And he ultimately, even according to Gyaltsa J, he's talking about the creation of your angel's body, you know, like this pure body of light, and the omniscience of a Buddha, the mind state of a Buddha, the enlightened mind state of a Buddha. And all of that is hidden in this one little line. Without the air, the fire won't flicker. Okay? How does effort have this kind of effect on you, your body turning into light and your mind turning into omniscience? You know, how does effort play a role? Okay? And for that, you need to have a little bit of an outline of the six perfections. Okay? What's the first perfection? Giving. People say generosity. I don't like the translation because there are three kinds of giving, right? Which are material giving, you know, like giving somebody food or a place to stay. Then there's protection from fear, and I wouldn't call that generosity. You know what I mean? Like saving someone from a mugger is giving them help, but it's not like generosity, you know? And then the third one is giving Dharma. Okay? Second one, it's called morality sometimes. I think the word is too Billy Grahamish, and I like to call it an ethical way of life. Like I have a friend ask me to sell him a big diamond tomorrow, and I know he's going to ask me if he can just skip the tax to New York City, you know, and I'm like thinking, you know, I start to think, what am I going to do when he asks me? And then I just decided, he's going to have to pay the tax. You know, there's all these ways you can get out of it. And it's not they're not honest, they're not moral, they're not ethical. And an ethical way of life is that. You have to give up those temptations to do those things, because it's not good karma. And if you get out of the tax, it's not because you lied to the government, it's because you did something generous before. And long story, you know all that. Okay. Number three, patience. The art of not getting angry. I told somebody in the car over on the way over here, I was happy that we finished the patience chapter, because I got so angry today at my boss. But I felt like we're already on to effort, so it's not like I couldn't teach it honestly tonight, you know. Number five, you can say meditation or concentration. And number six, wisdom. What does it mean when Master Shantideva says, Lung me yowa mepa shin, lung me yowa mepa. Without the wind, the fire never flickers. He's talking about the central position of effort in the six perfections. Okay? Effort goes both ways. Effort applies to the first three, and effort applies to the last two. Effort is considered the key in the six perfections. The first three perfections produce something, and the last two perfections produce something. And effort is located between them because it's needed for both. Okay? And for that, you have to know an idea called, say, sunam ki tsok. Sunam ki tsok. And then yeshi ki tsok. Yeshi ki tsok. Okay. Sunam means good deeds, goodness. It's translated as merit sometimes. It just means good deeds. Good deeds. Sunam ki tsok means a whole collection of good deeds, a whole pile of good deeds. Okay? A whole collection of good deeds. Yeshi ki tsok, yeshi means wisdom, knowledge. Okay? Yeshi. It's a common Tibetan name. Yeshi ki tsok means the accumulation of that knowledge, the collection of that knowledge. If you are able to collect a great deal of good deeds in this arrangement here, it creates your body of light, a Buddha's body, okay? So number one here creates the body of a Buddha, okay? Eventually, everybody in this room, if you haven't already, will enter a body made of pure light, and you won't have a body like this anymore, and you won't suffer in a body like this. This body, as we pointed out, I think, last time, is innately defective. Once you have a body like this, it must suffer. There's no way that you can have a body like this and not suffer. Once you have this body, you must suffer. It must go wrong. It must break down. And it will break down. If it didn't break down yet, just wait a while. Okay? It has to break down. And it will break down. And it'll get older and older. And day by day, it will get weaker and weaker. And then finally, it will just die. It must go like that. It always goes like that. If you collect enough goodness, good deeds, called sunam ki tsok, then that whole energy, that whole collective energy of all the good deeds you've done, they produce an angel's body. They produce a body of light. And then you don't, that body doesn't suffer. The body doesn't have organs. It's just pure light. And it's the kind of body you see in all the Buddhist paintings, which I think those paintings are a little bit dull to me. They should have light bulbs behind them or something, you know, because they're really shining, you know, they're really just made of light. Now, it's not like they're just sort of dull white or, you know, off-white or whatever Tara looks like sometimes. She's actually just pure light, and she's shining in pure light like that. Yeshe Kitsok is the combined knowledge, the whole big ball of knowledge that if you are able to reach it, it produces a Buddha state of mind. It produces omniscience. It produces the ability to see all things in all times and all places at one moment. And the emptiness of all those things at the same moment. And that's the mind of a Buddha. So the first, the collection of merit, number one here, produces your Buddha body. Okay? Number two produces your Buddha mind. What's that got to do with the six perfections? The number one from the other sheet, the collection of good deeds or goodness, is primarily related to the first three perfections. If you perform the first three bodhisattva activities well, which is giving, keeping up an ethical way of life, and patience, it produces what? The physical body of a Buddha, pure light. By the way, there's another body of the Buddha, right? I mean, there's the body of pure light that exists in a Buddha paradise. Simultaneously, actually 1 millisecond later after enlightenment, you are able to send out bodies in any form to help people on any planet, in any galaxy of the universe. Okay, so that's called the sending body or the nirmanakaya, the body that you send out. And that is called Beme Sundrup, which means it's spontaneous. The Buddha doesn't have any premeditation. The Buddha doesn't think, I have to send a body to Saturn today, I need one to go to Earth, I need one in New York, I need 25 out in Kansas. It's just, he just spontaneously appears in those places immediately, 1 millisecond after enlightenment. If it helps somebody, and it can even appear as a dog, as a cow, as a tree, as a bus, it doesn't matter. The Buddha can appear like that, and they do. So that's the physical body. It's created by the first three perfections, those two physical bodies. The mind of a Buddha is created by the last two perfections, meditation and wisdom. Yeah. They count it as physical body, motivated by the mind of the Buddha. Motivated by the Dharmakaya, the Jnana Dharmakaya, which is the mind of a Buddha. So that's, by the way, the reason why the fourth body doesn't kick in until 1 millisecond after enlightenment. Because first you have to achieve omniscience, and then omniscience sends out the body. Okay? So there's a time lag of a whole millisecond, you know. And Sundru, number four, the perfection of effort, feeds both. It feeds collecting the merit you need to reach a Buddha's body, and it feeds the meditation and wisdom you need to reach a Buddha's mind. And that's why Master Shantideva said, Lungme Yoa Mepa Shin. Okay, Lungme Yoa Mepa means without the wind, the flame doesn't move. Meaning, if you don't have effort, you won't get the other five perfections. You won't have anything to motivate the other five perfections. And you will not be able to create your enlightened body and your enlightened mind. If you get into the secret teachings of Buddhism, which you must try before you die, if you're serious about all this stuff, this has very profound implications. The statement that the inner wind moves the fire is very important. In achieving within this life a Buddha's body and a Buddha's mind before you die. If you go into the secret teachings, you can save about a zillion years and you can achieve your goal in this life. But you need the six perfections. And so I think Master Shantideva is punning us, you know, because it seems kind of otherwise sort of a weak metaphor to say, oh, candle lights don't flicker unless there's a little puff of wind, you know. What's the point? You know. And then Gyaltsen Jay says, what he means is, without the fourth perfection, you don't get any progress in the other five perfections. In producing the two collections, which produce your body of a Buddha and the mind of a Buddha, which incidentally are produced in the secret teachings through processes that are well described in the words, the fire never comes without the wind. So I think it's kind of beautiful. I think he's setting us up for something. Okay? I'd like Hector to read the verse, okay? Now you can hear the verse again. So close your eyes.
Contemplation 1. What moves the flame? Once you have practiced patience, begin your practice of effort, for enlightenment lies in making these kinds of efforts. Without a breeze, they never flicker, and just so, in the absence of effort, merit can never occur.
So he's saying, the text says, the verse says, in the absence of merit, what can never occur? In the absence of effort, merit cannot occur. And then Geltab Jay says, merit here refers to merit and wisdom, referring to the collections of merit and wisdom, referring to the things which create your Buddha body and your Buddha mind. Okay? And he's explaining the central position of effort in the six perfections. Okay? We'll go on to number 2. Okay, so close your eyes. This one's short, you gotta listen carefully.
Contemplation 2. Effort is joy. What is effort? It is joy in doing good.
Say tsung kang gela trowa o. Tsung kang gela trowa o. Okay. Very, very famous. I think it's the most famous words from this verse and one of the most famous lines from the whole Bodhisattva Charvatara. And I'll spell it for you. Tsun here stands for tsundu, which means what? Effort, okay? It's funny, in central Tibet, all the words have become slurred, like in New York City. And then in the outlying areas like Ladakh or even Mongolia, they still pronounce all the letters purely. So in Mongolia they'd say, Rsun Grus, Tsun Grus. And we had a monk, when I first came to the Mongolian temple in New Jersey, this old hermit who lived there for many years, never came out much, and his name was Dzungru. So that's easy to remember the spelling, okay, if you're learning the Tibetan, Dzungru, okay, which in modern Tibetan, modern central Tibetan is pronounced Tsundru, okay, Tsundru. Tsun means, is short for Tsundru, meaning effort. Tsun Kang means, what is effort? What is effort? It's a question. It's a rhetorical question. What is effort? And think about it in your own mind before I give you the answer, okay? If I say effort, I mean, sounds like something undesirable, right, Sykes? I mean, just kidding. It sounds like somebody making you wash the dishes or something like that. To me, I mean, the word effort, you know? So what is effort? Is it just trying hard? Okay, is it just to try hard? Does effort in Buddhism mean to try as hard as you can? Because that's to me, and I think the general meaning of effort in English. Okay, tsun in Tibetan or effort in English means to work hard or to try hard, put forth great efforts. Okay, but that's not the meaning of effort as a perfection. It's not the meaning of effort as a perfection. And Shantideva, Master Shantideva, gives the true meaning of effort in the next part of this line. I'll give you Shantideva, Master Shantideva's description. Gay means good deeds, doing good deeds, doing nice things. Okay? Gela means about doing nice things or good things. Droa means taking joy. Okay? So it's very interesting. This is a very, very famous line. Lamas are quoting it all the time in the monastery. Tsungkang gela droo means, what is the perfection of effort? It's to get off on doing good things. It's to enjoy doing good things. Okay? And that's very different from the idea of effort. It's to feel some kind of real delight and some kind of real enjoyment and pleasure in doing good things. And that's different from the idea of effort, you know. It's just some automatic, spontaneous, happy, joyful. I like to call it getting off on good things. You know, you're just very much attracted to doing beautiful deeds. You know, and beautiful, you're attracted and you get very, very excited about the idea of thinking good thoughts. You get excited about the idea of doing some Dharma activity. You get very turned on by the idea of going to meditate or do a retreat or something. And this is Sunkan Gela To'o. It doesn't mean just to work hard. You can work hard your whole life and never get the perfection of effort. The perfection of effort, like all the other perfections, is an attitude. It's an attitude. It's not how much you work, it's how much you enjoy it. Okay? And that's very interesting to me. I like that. And it's just to be excited and to be turned on by good things. You know, to really enjoy. You know, somebody says, you want to go meditate for an hour? And you go, yeah, you know, I really like to do that, you know. Or they say, you want to go on retreat? And you're like, yeah! You know, and you get very excited, you know, and you say, yeah, 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 I want to do that. So you want to write in your book all your bad deeds and track your thoughts today, you know? And say, yeah, that sounds great, you know, I think that's a great idea. You know, and you just, they all sound great to you. You want to go to class, in Chandrakirti says, you get the hair, what do you call it? You get some kind of rush up the back of your spine, you know. Somebody says, you want to go to Dharma class? And you're like, ooh, you know. So that's sun. That's effort. And that's the meaning of effort as a perfection. And this is the classic, this is the most famous reference to that in Buddhism. I think joyful effort might be a good translation. You know, joyful effort, happy effort. You know, happy, virtuous, good deed effort, or something like that. You know, just enjoying it. And I think you really have to try to get there. You really have to try to do that. You know, in the monastery, if they catch you going to a movie in town, there's a couple of punishments. One is you might have to stand there with this movie poster in the middle of the assembly during the morning prayers, like for an hour. You have to stand there and hold up this stupid movie, Indian movie poster, you know. And another punishment is to do like 100 prostrations to all the assembled monks as an atonement, you know. And then I remember the Giku, which is the disciplinarian, the person who keeps discipline in the monastery. He gave this stirring lecture one day about, this is not really a punishment, you know. If you had tsundru, you'd be turned on by the idea of having to do 100 prostrations in front of the whole assembly of all these holy monks, you know. And he wasn't even sure it was a very good punishment, you know, because if you were really a bodhisattva, there wouldn't be anything you would enjoy more than prostrating 100 times in front of the assembly, you know. And I remember he gave this big lecture one time. Okay, but I think you really have to examine yourself. And there's this thing where in Tibetan it's called te mare, te mare. Te means look. Doing good deeds is not like some kind of obligation. A te means like a customs duty or an excise tax or something like that. Te omare means don't look upon your meditation and your practices and keeping your book of your good deeds and bad deeds. Don't look upon it as some kind of obligation. You should get turned on about it and you should have some joy about it. And if you don't have that, then you are not perfecting this perfection. You know, if the idea of going to class or the idea of meditating, or the idea of going on retreat, or the idea of going to work today and trying to practice patience with this boss who's screaming at me. I had two bosses screaming at me today. If it doesn't turn you on, you don't have this perfection. And you have to think about it. You know, you have to think about why is it that you have to drag yourself to your meditation seat? You know, I had people tell me, do we have to meditate now? And I'm like, yeah, you have the great honor and joy of meditating now, you know. And it's very bad to think of it as a te, as an obligation. You know, it's an honor, it's a joy, it's a fantastic opportunity to do your meditation in the morning, you know. And if you have any other attitude, you have a serious problem. You have a really bad problem. And you have to work on this. You have to study this chapter. So I'm setting you up for this chapter. Okay? I mean, if you have any hesitation about doing your morning prayers, or you have some kind of, you know, like you make a face when it's time to meditate, or you keep putting off your tantric retreat that Rinpoche told you had to do for next year, you know, or next month, or keep doing that because really you don't take any joy in it, or you're kind of making up excuses to cut your meditation session short, you know, not 15 minutes but 13 minutes, you know, you don't have joy, and there's a serious problem. You will fail. You won't collect those two collections. So you have to look into why you think like that. And this is the subject of this chapter. This chapter is supposed to inspire you to get some kind of joy or happiness or pleasure or get turned on by doing Buddhist practice. You know, your meditations, your prayers, helping other people, staying up late to do some virtuous thing. It's supposed to turn you on about doing all these things. Serving the monastery, serving God's Tao or whatever, you know. Just, it's supposed to get you inspired to get turned on about doing these things rather than looking on them as an obligation. Matsushadideva and the debate master at Sarame, they don't like the word obligation. That's very bad. It should be joy. You should get turned on, you know. You should be sneaking into your room to meditate extra, you know. You should be breaking into people's homes and putting money in their wallets, you know. You get turned on by doing good deeds, you know. You should get excited about it and be unstoppable, you know. You should just be like a, what do you call it, like addicted, like a virtuoholic or something, you know. And all you want to do, all you can think about is doing your next virtue, you know, doing your next practice. It should be like that. So if you don't feel like that, and I think a lot of Americans start to look upon their prayers and their meditations as some kind of obligation or something they're supposed to do, or the dakye is something you're supposed to do or something you're supposed to memorize, and I'm supposed to do so many mantras, that's really bad. That word is really bad. Supposed to do is really bad. You know, it's like your honor and your joy and your privilege and your fantastic opportunity to do those things, you know. And if you don't think like that, you have a problem, and you have to study this chapter. You have to think about this chapter. Next verse.
Contemplation 3. What stops effort? Here I will explain the things that work against it. These are laziness, an attraction to what is bad, and the feeling of being discouraged, belittling yourself.
In the next section, Master Shantideva, after identifying what effort is, which now you know, it's not just working hard about the Dharma, it's getting turned on by the Dharma. Okay? Getting turned on by the Dharma. And he says, what could stop you from getting turned on by the Dharma? You know, let's make a list. He says, I'm going to make a list for you of all the enemies you have to watch out for, which will destroy your effort. The things which will destroy you're getting turned on about the Dharma. So he makes a list, okay? And I'll give it to you in Tibetan. Lelo is one of the first words that all Americans learn who try to study Tibetan. It's very interesting. I think it's subconscious. I think because it's very similar to laying low. And Lelo means laziness in Tibetan. It's the Tibetan word for laziness. Yeah, it's a kind of, it sounds like I'm going to lay low for a while. It almost seems like connected to the word for laziness. Master Shantideva will get in the next verse, he'll get into the definition of laziness and what is laziness. But basic laziness is, in this verse, he describes it as pretty much being attracted to some kind of inactive, unjoyful laying around or lazing around. You know, enjoying the pleasant feeling of lazing around, not engaging in virtue, okay? Just lazing around. To get into the feeling, you know, wasting time, wasting hours of your day, sitting around doing nothing, okay? Basic description of laziness, to be attracted to that. And to, you know, you get some kind of feeling of, it's like eating too much chocolates or something, and you get this sort of stuffed feeling, stuffed, stupid, overdose feeling. I don't know what it is. But that's lelo. Lelo is like to be attracted to that feeling, like when you sleep in too late and you slept too much and you feel like a pig or something, and you got this inner feeling, you feel stuffed or bloated or something, or somehow lazy, sleepy, you know, just sort of like eating too much or sleeping too much, and then not doing your meditations, not doing your practices, not feeling like studying Tibetan, you know, just this kind of sloth. He calls it sloth, okay? Alright, that's lelo, basic description of lelo. By the way, that is not the same as, and Master Shantideva and all the lamas of the Lamrim are very clear, it is not the same as doing virtue very well and happily and then taking a good rest. That's a different thing, you know. That's a whole different thing. Like if you stayed up all night during the reading or something and only got 1 hour of sleep, to go and lay down for a couple hours is wonderful. And it is a bodhisattva activity to take care of your body and to sleep well. You know, to sleep enough and to take care of yourself is a bodhisattva activity. No problem. He's not talking about that. They're very careful to say that. This is talking about excessive, lazy, sloth, lazing around, reading the New York Times for 3 hours on Sunday. You know, something like that. That's sloth. Okay? It's a waste of time and there's no great benefit. There is practically no benefit to it. Okay? But if you're overworked with your dharma work and you're stressed out and you're tired, it might be very appropriate to sit down and read a novel or something. It might be very virtuous to do that if you need it to keep your balance, to keep your spiritual balance. There are times when recreation or entertainment is very, very spiritually desirable and healthy and virtuous. And they're all clear to say that. You know, it's not that it's bad per se, it's bad in excess. It's bad when it's all you do. Okay? It's bad more than you need to get on with your virtue. Okay? But there is a time when you have to do it. And in the monastery we have, for example, Gaye. Gaye is, and I think every great religion has the equivalent of Gaye. Gaye is after the strict summer debating and meditation season that we have. Then there's like this 2-3 week Gaye. Gaye means let it all out. And you're allowed to play radios, and you're allowed to play games, and you're allowed to play soccer, and you take your shirt off and run around and stuff. And that's called Gaye. And suddenly, all over the monastery, these tape recorders appear, you know, and radios, and checker games, and what do they call those things? Karim. They call it Karim. You know, suddenly the abbot is playing Karim. You know, suddenly this Karim board has appeared. You know, and even the abbot is playing. You know. And there's a time for that. There's a time for resting. There's a time for entertainment. And there's a time for relaxing. And then you get back to your virtuous activities. And that becomes a virtue. And that's fine. We're talking about just continually doing it when you don't need to do it, when there's no great function to it. Just being lazy. Okay? Number two. La Shemba. Chang'en. La Shemba. Chang'en is short for Chawangemba. Chawangemba means bad deeds. Okay, doing bad things, doing wrong things. Killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, slander, harsh word, idle gossip, craving, ill will, wrong view, etc. Okay? Being attracted to those things. I don't think anybody in this room is particularly attracted to murdering people or stealing large, embezzling large amounts of money from work or committing adultery with every lady you meet. But we do have this attraction for things that are not wholesome, things that are not beneficial, things that don't help anybody in particular. I can think of the New York Times and stuff like that, you know. I mean, just television is Chang'en La Shemba. You know, it's being attracted to something which is actually pretty negative. And if you're a Buddhist, I think this is an important thing, not to feel a guilt trip, you know, like it's very American or Protestant or something, or Judeo-Christian about feeling guilty. The word guilty doesn't exist in Tibetan. I don't know of any word in Tibetan for guilty. There's no word for feeling guilty. They don't have the idea of feeling guilty. It's not like that. It's not like you have to feel guilty about watching TV, or guilty about sneaking out to an R-rated movie, or guilty about reading the New York Times or something like that. It is just simply a very dangerous thing to do. It's a dangerous thing to do. You don't have much time in your life. You could die at any moment. It's easy to get hit by a car in New York City. You know, it's very easy to die on the streets in New York very suddenly. And it's just dangerous to do those things. It's not like you have to feel guilty about it. It's just stupid. You don't have that much time. You know, it's a race against death. Whether you will reach that body of light before you die or not. It's a very, very deadly, serious game that we're life. It's very, very deadly serious, and you must, if you don't reach it before you die, the mind does not stop. You do not stop. You go to somewhere else, and there are many terrible places you can go. So it's really a very deadly serious race against time, and you need every moment you have. So it's not like you should feel bad or you should feel guilty about wasting your time. It's dangerous to waste your time. It's very dangerous to do that. And that's all he's saying. To be attracted. Shimba means to be attracted. La means two. Chang'en means like negative or useless activities. Okay, it's just, that's another thing that destroys your sense of joy in the Dharma. You know, to be, and I say not on a level of killing people, but on that, like we used to do this thing in the diamond business. There's this stuff called white topaz, and it comes from Sri Lanka and it comes from Brazil. And the stuff from Brazil, all topaz, if you radiate it, it turns blue. So all the blue topaz you see in the store is white topaz, which somebody has radiated, you know, in an atomic reactor. And so we called up the Atomic Energy Commission. We said, is this dangerous? And they said, you know, we don't know. You know, everybody's doing it. They're selling it in all the stores in the United States. But we really don't know if it's dangerous or not, because we don't know the effects of low-level radiation over a long period of time. You know, we know if you stand in front of an atom bomb and get your skin peeled off, that's bad for you. But this thing about wearing something that has a little bit of extra radiation for a year or 2 years or 5 years or 10 years, we don't know. We think it probably hurts you, but we can't prove it, because you're radiated by so many other things that it's hard to test it, you know. And I think of Chang'en, negative activities, like reading the New York Times on Sunday is like low-level radiation, you know. It's not going to kill you. It's not like one exposure is going to kill you. But the habit of wasting 3 precious hours of your life once a week over the period of a decade, I don't think you can measure the damage. It's damaging. It's very seriously damaging. You know, wasting an hour of your day watching television or something is like a low-level radiation. It's not going to make you a bad person. I don't believe that. You know, it's not going to kill you. But I think the habit of doing it over a long period creates cancer. You know, it has its effect on you. It has this negative... That's what Shantideva is saying. Master Shantideva is saying, this attraction to low-level negative things over the length of a lifetime destroys your effort. It destroys your joy in the Dharma. And if you expose yourself to that low-level radiation over a long period of time, it kills your joy in the Dharma. And then your feeling about Dharma is like, yeah, do I have to meditate for a half hour? Couldn't you make it like 28 minutes? You know, I get people asking me that, you know. When you say I have to meditate an hour a day, can I count the preliminaries, or I can't count the preliminaries, you know? And it's like, what are you talking about, you know? It's like your honor. It's like, you should be asking me, you know, is it okay if I don't go to the bathroom until 3 p.m. because I want to meditate all day, you know? And that would be joy, you know, that would be spiritual joy. And I think those other things are like low-level radiation. Okay, blue topaz, okay? Reading New York Times, watching TV, reading magazines. You know, not one of them is going to kill you. Yeah, except for articles about us in the New York Times. Okay. Number three. Giluk. Giluk. Giluk is a very rare word, and it's a very specific word, and the place where it comes most is in Master Shantideva's Passions chapter on effort, okay? And it's, Giluk is a very special feeling. It's the feeling of saying, I don't think I could ever do that. Low self-esteem or being discouraged, okay? It's like, you know, I've seen how the Dalai Lama acts. You know, I've seen how Ken Rinpoche acts, and I don't think I could ever do that. You know, how could I ever be like them? You know, how could I ever get so patient? Or how could I ever learn all those things? You know, it's impossible. Now, how could I ever get to the point where I could meditate for 2-3 hours straight without any kind of distraction? I can't do that. That's for those big lamas, you know. I'm not like them. And that's just not true. And Master Shantideva, throughout this chapter, throughout the last chapter, throughout the whole book, over and over he says, just start. You know, start in your own puny, wimpy little way. And start to make it a habit. And the human mind is extremely powerful. And if you start at a low level, you know, at a tiny level, to do something small, like when he's on the chapter on giving, he says, somebody says, how could I ever be like a bodhisattva can take a knife and cut their hand off and hand it to somebody who needs something to eat, for example, if they're not vegetarian, okay? Or they could, there's this thing where they have this ability to reach into their eye socket with this finger. I mean, theoretically you can do it, right? Like I could do it right now if I really wanted to. If I had the strength, you know, and reach in and pull out your eyeball and hand it to someone who doesn't have an eye, you know. I mean, bodhisattvas have this ability to do that because they care so much about other people. So Master Shantideva says, don't do it. It's a big mistake. Like somebody like you and me, if we try to do that, after a couple minutes, we'll regret it. You know, we'll say, oh my God, you know, what did I do? He says, start with carrots and potatoes. You know, give away a carrot, give away a potato. You know, get in the habit, start small, and make it habitual. That's he said in the last chapter. Everything depends on your own mind. Everything depends on getting used to it. You can do anything. Anybody in this room can do anything. The human mind is very, very trainable. You just have to start small and build up steadily. And you can, anyone in this room could get to the point where you could cut your arm off. And you could get to the point where you could reach in and take your eye out and hand it to someone. Don't think you can't do it. You know, there's a very famous verse where the Buddha says, bugs can do it, flies can do it, roaches can do it. You know, if they try, if they train, if you start small and if you build up very steadily, you can do anything. You know, the human mind is extremely powerful. And you can do it. You just have to start and try. So Giluk, he says, Giluk is the opposite emotion. Giluk is like saying, I could never do that. I could never do that. It's a big enemy of the fourth perfection. And you have to forget it. You know, there'll be bad days when you feel depressed. You know, like you taught the patience chapter of Shantideva for 2 or 3 weeks at the Quaker house, and then your boss screamed at you a little bit and you got pissed off and said something. Like I did today. And then you start feeling giluk, you know, like, here I am, you know, I'm standing up there talking about it, I'm getting furious at my boss right away, I mean, within about 2 minutes after he screams at me. But you can't be giluk, okay? You have to think, okay, I failed this one time, but I'll come back, you know, tomorrow, Thursday, when I have that meeting with him, I'll just keep my cool, you know, I won't get angry. And I'll think about, what am I supposed to think about? You tell me, and I want to keep bringing it up. Huh? Very, very, very important. Don't forget it. Most important thing in this class. Most important thing of this course. Where did he come from? You know, no Buddhist who ever encounters something negative should ever fail to say, where did this come from? Why did I ever meet this stupid boss? Why did he ever walk into this company? Why did he interview here? Why did he see the ad in the paper and come to interview here? Why? What happened? I have to get into that mode. You know, I don't like this thing is happening to me. This person's being bad to me. Then you have to think, where did they come from? And if you, the answer doesn't come up clearly and immediately in your mind, you will never perfect these things. Never, ever. You know, a Buddhist has to be in this constant mode of, where did you think this world came from? Where did you think this guy came from? You know, what are the chances? Big bang, forget it. Something comes from nothing, right? Caused, uncaused, nobody caused it. Come on, there's nothing in the world that's not caused. Oh, there's this big guy with a white beard that makes everything. Well, who made him? You know, I mean, forget it. It came from your karma. You created this guy. You have to get in that mode. You have to constantly think about the things that you hate and the things that you don't like. Who made this thing? Where did this thing come from? What's the best way to get rid of it? Okay? So that's Giluk. We'll take a break, come back in about 10 minutes. Okay?
Contemplation number 4. What causes laziness? What promotes the feeling of laziness is sloth. The sweet enjoyment of some pleasure, as well as craving for time spent sleeping, all leading to a failure to feel a sense of disgust for the pain of the circle of life.
Okay. Shantideva, Master Shantideva gives 3 causes for laziness. He gives 3 factors that promote laziness. So we'll go through those 3. All right. Laziness is just one form of the enemies to joyful effort. Okay. There are 2 others, which we just had. But he's going to give you the causes of laziness. It's very, very Buddhist to go into the causes of something, because if you avoid the causes, you choke off the result. We had it when we talked about patience. And the cause was what? Getting upset. Okay? I mean, anger feeds on getting upset. And so if you never get upset, you'll never get angry. Getting upset and getting angry are different things. And that feeling of unhappiness called getting upset, you know, the basic feeling of being unhappy, then triggers anger, feeds anger. So it's very Buddhist to look into the causes of anger, because once you're angry, it's almost too late to do anything about it. You have to look into what makes you get upset or what makes you unhappy and attack that. So this is the same thing. He's talking about the causes that trigger laziness and destroy your joy in meditating and practicing and things like that. So first one is called nyomle. Nyomle? Nyomle? Nyomle is an attraction to enjoying some kind of pleasure, something you enjoy doing. I would say like watching television or reading too much New York Times or things like that. You know, something that you get some kind of pleasure out of, which is destructive to your spiritual life, you know. And that's nyomle. Nyomle means to feel some kind of attraction for that kind of worldly pleasure that's going to actually, it's like a low-level radiation, and it's ruining your Dharma practice in a very subtle and long-term way. It's not like you're becoming a monster the first time you read the New York Times, but if you get in the habit of reading it all the time, or in the habit of watching TV, or doing anything else that's not particularly virtuous, then over a long period of time, it just destroys your joy in goodness. Are you going to get automatically turned on about meditation the first time you try it? And should you go into these guilt trips, which, you know, American Buddhists love to ruin their Buddhist practice by getting into these guilt trips, you know, I can't recite the 2-hour prayer for that, you know, and they get in this guilt trip and they feel bad, then they don't enjoy their practice, and like, it's like, just practice a little bit, you know, get used to it, start small, you know, get off, you know, start with a 10-minute meditation, go up to 15 minutes, go up to 20 minutes, you know, don't feel guilty if you can't sit down and enjoy a whole hour's meditation, because it hurts, you know, at first it's not comfortable, so start small, you know, get used to doing 10 minutes, then get used to doing 15 minutes. And, you know, if you do something like exercise, right? If you go and try to bench press 200 pounds the first day, you hurt yourself. If you start with a little bit of exercise and then you keep building up, it becomes very enjoyable. Once you get good at it, it becomes very enjoyable. But if you ran 5 miles on the first day that you tried to run, it would feel bad and you wouldn't want to do it again. And it's the same with your meditations. It's the same with your virtues. It's the same with generosity. It's the same with keeping morality. You have to start at some level that you can handle. And start modestly, start wisely, and then build up slowly. So he's saying like that. Nyomle is some kind of feeling of pleasure about wasting your time. So nyila tembe sepa. Nyila tembe sepa. Nyi means sleeping. Nyi means sleeping. Lazing around. Nyila temba means to sleep for a period of time. To spend time sleeping. Sepa means to have a craving for that. So nyila tembe sepa means you just get sort of an addiction to lazing around. Okay, either in the form of sleeping or, you know, laying halfway down, and like that. Okay. It's one of the enemies. It's one of the things that promotes laziness. Okay. It's one of the things that will destroy your joy in virtue. And I can, you know, incidentally, eating too much is related to that. You know, eating too much or eating the wrong things very much promotes this. You know, being in the habit of eating too much, which is very typical for Americans, you know, eating more than you need, eating more than you're hungry for, promotes this also. It gets you into the frame of mind, like if you try to meditate after eating two pizzas or something, it's impossible. And if you have too much sugar, it's impossible to meditate right after that. So part of that is to watch your eating. And, you know, it's not emphasized in Buddhism a lot except when you do retreats. But in general, if you don't eat wisely, then you won't be able to meditate well. And you will get sleepy when you're trying to meditate and things like that. I think it's important for Americans to watch that also. You know, and if you go to a convenience store or a corner store here, it's almost impossible to find something that doesn't do that to you. You know, I mean, I think 75% or 80% of American foods are, they make you sort of lazy. They make you sort of low level, low energy. And it's different for each person. It depends on your own body. You know, what's healthy for one person is not healthy for another person. You know, and you have to get to know your own body, especially in retreat or meditation. A food that might be harmful for one person might be very helpful for another person. So you have to be careful. But generally, I think it's important for Americans I believe we eat too much. We eat too much of the wrong things. And then they generally drag down your level of energy and your ability to meditate. I think if you didn't do that, you could do a lot more. You know, you could stay up more. You could have a lot more energy. Did you have a question? He asked the difference between nyomle and lelo. The words are linguistically related, obviously. Nyomle is one of the causes of lelo. Okay, nyomle is like taking an excessive pleasure in doing what I call low-level radiation. And lelo, technically speaking, is not to feel joy in your practice. Okay, so technically speaking, you know, if you want to get technical, nyomle, attraction to wasting your time, for example, is a cause of not being happy to meditate and not being happy to do your practice. Okay, and that's the difference. In Master Shantideva's presentation, that's the difference. In general, in the Tibetan language, nyomle means someone who lazes around, and lelo means laziness. So, but Master Shantideva is trying to present it as cause and effect, and Gyaltsev Jay is doing that. Say, Korwe, Dumya, La, Nikyoa. Korwe, Dumya, La, Nikyoa. This is a third condition that promotes laziness that Master Shantideva mentions, but he almost mentions it as a cause of the first two. I mean, a result of the first two. So it's, number three is almost a result of the first two, but it also promotes laziness. Laziness being a lack of joy in goodness, right? A lack of joy. Korwa means samsara or cyclic existence. Okay, how is it defined? You know, how is korwa defined? basically the death and aging of this body and this life. Basically, you know, you hear cyclic existence and you're thinking rebirth after rebirth after rebirth. You don't have to think of it that way. The definition of samsara is, in technically, is the aging and death of you caused by your past deeds and mental afflictions. That's the definition of samsara. Samsara is not outside of you. You are samsara. You are cyclic existence. You are suffering. You are the condition of suffering, is you. And that's korwa. Korwa dungyal means suffering. Okay, the suffering of this life. The suffering of normal life, non-enlightened life, non-paradise life. If you were in Friday night class, non-going to heaven life. Okay, korwa dungyal la. Nikyoa means to fail, to get fed up with it. Me means not. Kyoa means I'm fed up with this stuff. I'm tired of this stuff. I don't want any more of this stuff. And what he means is, if you get into the New York Times and television and stuff like that, A. B, if you get into lazing around, going out to movies, you know, just enjoying yourself, basically, and wasting your time, something much worse will happen to you than just getting old and dying. You will fail to recognize this life for what it is. You know, this life is pure suffering. There's nothing about this life which is not suffering. And if you don't, if you get trapped in those first two causes for laziness, you'll never recognize that fact. Who recognizes it? Who comes to church? Who comes to temple? You know, go to a Christian church service, the 7 o'clock service, not the 9 o'clock. Okay, go to a Christian church at 7 o'clock for the early service. You know, go to Rashi Gebeling Buddhist Temple, Howell, New Jersey. Not at the Christmas, I mean, not the Jeton Kapa Day. Go on during the 8th or the 30th of the month when it's the standard daily service. The only people there are over 70. You know, the only people who come are over 70 years old. Why? They woke up to this fact. Okay? Are we in the same condition that they are? Yes. Are we just as mortal and likely to die tomorrow as they are? Absolutely. But when you get 70, you can't ignore it anymore because all your friends are dead. You know, all the people you knew, your brother, your sisters, your mother, your father, all your old friends from the old days, you're like the one in 20 who didn't die yet, or the one in 50 who didn't die yet. And then you go to church. You know, you go to temple. You're korwe dungyalam kyoa. You know, you are finally fed up with this life and you see it for what it is. So don't wait till you get that old. You know, you have to use logic. You have to say, friend number one died, brother number two died, my father died, my mother died, my grandmother died. You know, people around me dying all the time. Duh, I might die too. You know, maybe I should do something now while I'm still alive. I mean, it doesn't take a genius to figure it out, but we have this kind of blinders. You know, we refuse to admit it, that that's the way life is. And that's the third cause for laziness. Okay? We gotta move a little bit.
Contemplation number 5, lambs to the slaughter. Haven't you even got eyes to see how those in the world with you have gone steadily to the slaughter? To sit here still and enjoy your sleep, it's just the same as the oxen waiting for the butcher.
Okay, I was in Arizona in retreat like last month. And when I got out, I was driving to the airport, and there was I passed a slaughterhouse, and there was this long, like I don't know, half a mile of fencing, and then there were all these cows, you know, hundreds and hundreds of cows, and they're sitting around and they're chewing hay, you know, and they're drinking water, and they're all like very relaxed, you know, and then you get to the other end and there's this big building and they're leading them in there, you know. And you know they don't come out, you know. They catch a hook on their behind, on this tendon here, and they pull them upside down and then they slit the throats. And alive, while they're alive, they pull this hook on them and then they slit their throats and then they bleed them a special way and stuff like that. So the ones outside are just sitting there and, you know, they're like, oh, you know, Cow number one just went in that building. My other friend just went in that building, and they're too stupid to figure out what's going on. You know, they're too stupid to understand that they're going to be led into this building next. And that's the nature of a cow. I mean, a cow, according to Buddhism, the brain of a cow is too stupid in most cases, except for when they feel some kind of instinct about what's going to happen and they start to cry or something. But in general, they're just too stupid to logically deduce that nobody comes out of this building that all these other cows are being led into, and they just sit there and chew on the grass and watch, you know, and they're just not aware. They're too stupid to figure out what's going on. And Master Shantideva is comparing us to them, okay? He's saying, Mahe Dhani Dubashin is the root text. Mahe Dhani Dubashin means, you know, most of us are just like that. You know, people all around you are getting led away day by day by Lord of Death, you know, and he's slaughtering them. You know, people all around you, people at work, people you know, people in the New York Times, read their obituary, although you're not supposed to now, right? You know, all the famous people around you, all these famous people, Versace or whatever his name is, you know, getting killed day by day, you know, each day one more person dead, one more person dead, one more person dead. They are your contemporaries. Contemporary means you're in the same generation as them. You know, what did you think? You know, are they somehow lots older than you? They're not much older than you, and lots of them are younger. You know, they're your contemporaries. That's what Shantideva is saying. Master Shantideva is saying, look at your contemporaries, the people who are alive in the world with you right now, and they're just dying day by day. They're just being led to this slaughterhouse and dying. And you're like those stupid cows chewing on the grass, drinking the water, and watching these other cows go into the slaughterhouse and can't figure out what's going on. You know, wake up. Mun sum du tong means open your eyes. You know, you can see what's going on. You don't have to be an Einstein to figure it out. You're like them. Just don't sit there like a stupid cow and watch TV and read the New York Times and sit around. You know, he says, don't do it. Don't be like a stupid cow. Okay, and that's it's the stupidity. It's happening right in front of you and you don't notice it. It's the steadiness of other people getting killed. You know, I mean, it's very steady flow. It's not like in one day 300 people get killed around you. It's just a very steady, you know, every week, every month, somebody you know gets killed, dies. And what are you, stupid? You know, they're leading people in one by one. They're leading the cows in one by one. Don't sit there like a cow and think about your next TV show or your next movie. You know, do something. And that's what that's what this verse is about. Okay, next verse.
Contemplation number 6. I still have time. Death is coming to take you, moving at incredible speed. In the time you have left, try to amass good karma. When the moment arrives, it's true you may give up your laziness, but what good can it do at a time so wrong? You haven't got to this just yet, the others just started, and yet another has half still left to do. Suddenly then does the Lord of Death make his arrival, and in your mind you can only cry, he kills me.
Okay, you know, we have this computer project and we're inputting all the important books of Buddhism, you know, in Tibetan. It'll take maybe another 50 years or 100 years. And in the tenure, in the canon, you know, in the basic Buddhist books, there's a couple of books that are unfinished. You know, they just go and they just stop in the middle of a line. And the author died while he was writing it. Dini ma che di che che, lobo chi da won won ni. This is root text, you know. You didn't quite get to do this yet. You know, you have this plan to do this project, you know. And this other project is like half done. And this other project, you're thinking about doing it. And, you know, you have all these plans, you know, you have all these projects. I have 21 projects, you know, and some of them are half done, some of them are in the planning stage, some of them are pretty well along, and in the back of your mind always there's this, I'll be able to finish this, I'll be able to finish this, you know, give me another 6 months, this will be finished. When do you plan to do that next CD-ROM? Oh, 6 months, you know, it'll be out, you know. But you can't be in that mode, says Master Shantideva. You know, it will come, and you know, they'll say, oh, this is the book that Michael Roach started that he never finished, you know. It stops in the middle of a sentence, you know, because he got hit by a car that night or something like that. You know, he says, wake up. You know, there's going to come a moment. Everybody who ever died had all these plans and all these projects and all these things they were going to do. And then suddenly, just boom, they die. You know, and he says, you got to get into that mode. You have to think about it and be ready for it to come. And then he says something very beautiful, and it's leading up to the next verse. He says, what the hell did you think you were going to do at the moment you died? You know, are you going to save, are you going to do all your meditation for your life on your deathbed? You going to wait till then? You know, are you going to become a master meditator on the last few days? You know, when you get a cancer and they put you in the hospital, is that when you're going to start meditating? You know, is that when you're going to start learning Tibetan? You know, is that when you're going to start reading scriptures? You know, or is that when you're going to start thinking about all this stuff? He says, forget it. You know, wrong time. You got to do it now. He says, if you wait too long, you just won't be able to do it. And beyond that, we have a body problem. You know, you get to a certain age, you will not be able to meditate properly, period. You know, people tell me, people over 50, my students over 50, they start complaining. They come to me after class. They said, that was kind of cool that you said that, you know. It's a fact. You know, you get a certain age, you cannot meditate properly. You can't do it. You know, you can't sit long enough. You never will. And it's a fact of life. Get used to it. Quit fooling yourself. Now, everybody says, I'm going to do my retreats next year. Or I'll do my retreats when I get a good vacation from work. Forget it. You know, quit the job. Get a job that you can do nice retreats. You're not going to have time later. There is no later. Everybody thinks later, and then nobody does later. You know, if you're not doing it now, you're not going to do it. Period. Forget later. I mean, so many people say later. Had so many students, I'm going to go to law school, then I'll be back in class. Yeah, right. You know, I never see them again, you know. And that's it. You know, forget later. If you're going to do something, start now. If you're not starting now, you're never going to do it. Face it. You know, what's going to be different a year from now that's not here now? You know, if you've got to take steps now to take care of things. You will not be able in the final years of your life or in the final hours of your life to make up for what you didn't do throughout your life. It's impossible. It's impossible. You can't do it. You can't wait. And when the time comes that you're too old or you're not well, you won't be able to meditate. You won't be able to reach those levels that help you when you die. By the time you get cancer or something or whatever it's going to be for you, it's too late. It's just too late to do anything. You can't be effective. Your body can't move that well. And your mind is already disturbed. It's too late. There is a too late. I mean, don't think there's not a too late. There is a too late. And we're close. And everybody here is close. And don't think you're going to do it next year. Forget it. It doesn't work that way. If you're not planning it now and acting out the plan now, to prepare for your death and do your meditations, do your retreats, do your practices, do your meditations in the morning, you won't do it. You just won't do it. If you're not doing it tonight, if you don't start after class tonight, some kind of practice, forget it. You know, you're kidding yourself. You really are kidding yourself. And that's the point of that verse. Okay, next.
Contemplation number 7, what it feels to die. What is it that you imagined you'd do at that moment, tormented by the memory of the wrongs you've done and with the roar of the hell realms in your ears, bringing such terror that you cover your body in shit?
I have a pet peeve. I have all these Dharma pet peeves. I hate Dharma rumors, and I have Dharma pet peeves. One of my pet peeves is that I have some students who come to me and they say, I don't have to meditate that much, and I don't have to practice that much. Because I went to this lama, you know, this lama came into town, he dropped in on a Friday night, and he was gone on Sunday, and he taught us all poa. You know, and no problem, when I die I'm going to do poa. You know, what's poa? Poa is like this thing where you project your consciousness to a higher realm. You know, as you die, you go into this deep meditative state, you know, and you project your mind to a higher realm. And this you learn on Friday night and the lama's gone by Sunday morning. And you've mastered it in 24 hours, you know. Master Shantideva in this verse says, forget it. You know, forget it. Go up on a high building in New York. Have someone stand behind you. Go stand at the edge. Let them go like that. You know, and feel your reaction. Seriously, feel that there's this human thing about, I don't want to die. You know, and there's this incredible fear of dying. Every human has it. I think it's subconscious because we've died so many times and gone to so many bad places. I think it's this subconscious memory of your past lives. But go up and let someone just jerk you like that and feel the feeling of it, you know, and you'll, you know, you just instinctively go like that. You fight them. You don't want to die, you know. And they say that as you die, as you go through the process of dying, the last few hours, it's this total chaos. You know, the mind is collapsing. The physical basis that supports thought, what we call electricity in the West, is collapsing. And you hallucinate. You start to go into hallucinations. And you start to have this incredible terror comes up in your mind. And Shantideva, he says, look, what are you going to do, poor, you know? You're going to be crapping in your own pants. He says that, you know. He says, you're going to be scared to death and you're going to be totally in terror. And you'll be like a crazy person, you know, and you'll be begging not to die. And what are you going to go into a deep state of meditation then? You know, are you going to do everything then? He says, forget it. He says, ridiculous. What do you think, you know? What are you thinking about? It's the most terrifying moment of your whole life. It's more terrifying than everything that ever happened to you. All at one moment. They say, nature ki dungyal. Nature ki dungyal means, as you die, there's a special kind of pain. A very sharp pain of like having your chest crushed by something. And it comes in your body as you die. There's this incredible pain that comes in your body as you die. And they say, what do you think? You know, you're going to go into some deep state of meditation. At that moment, that's the last possible moment. It's the least likely of every moment in your life that you can do anything then. It's impossible. So this is on your homework. Four things. Process of death. What it feels like to die. Say Rangdik, Tembe, Dungba. Rangdik, Tembe, Dungba. Rangdik means the bad deeds you did during your whole life. You know, Buddhism also says that as you die, you start to see the events of your whole life go before. You know how they say it, what do they call it? It plays your whole life before you. What do they call that? Your whole life flashes in front of you. They say that's true. That you have this very clear memory of all the major negative things in your life, that they start to play back, okay, and that you're aware of them. Tamba means you remember them, okay. Dungba means it torments you. You start to get into this tormented state. It's very, very torment, like very seriously painful to be aware that you have all this karma. Like you don't really think about it unless your life is in danger. You know, at the moment that your life is in danger, if it's ever happened to you, like if you've been in a near-death thing or something. I was in a plane and the wheels didn't work and they told us we might die. And you really do start to review all the things you did in your life. You know, it becomes very natural to review everything you did in your life. And then you automatically start to see, you can't fool yourself anymore. You know it was wrong. There's no reason to fool yourself. At that moment, you're very honest with yourself. And you know that you did all these things wrong. And you start to feel really bad because, number two, say nyawe dra tupa. Nyawe dra tupa. Nyawa means hell realms, hell. Okay? Long story, but Buddhism accepts the idea of hell. And it's either very hot or very cold and extremely bad suffering. Nyawe. Dra means the roar or the sound of the hells. The hells, you know, according to Buddhism, if you could hear a hell realm for like a minute, you would go crazy. You know, just beings constantly killing each other and slaughtering each other and cutting each other and burning each other and hitting each other in like a wild frenzy. Every being there trying to rip each other to pieces with their hands, you know, and people, a whole world of people struggling like that and trying to rip each other apart physically with their hands. And like when you're born there, you just instantly conscious. Like you don't go through a hell childhood. you're born there complete as a human. And the minute you're aware, someone's trying to rip your eyes out or rip your face off, and you just spend your whole existence there furiously trying to rip their faces off before they rip you off. And there's this sound of millions of beings doing that to each other in this huge place. And as you die, you get this premonition of it. You hear it. You know, it comes into your ear. And you know that you're going there. And you feel this thing. What are the odds of going there? I mean, frankly, I don't say this in public very often. I would not get up and say this in a public lecture. The Buddha put the odds at about 1 billion to 1 that you will go there. Something like that. Or millions and millions to one. Okay? That any given person will go to a hell realm, the odds are something like 1 million to 1. You know, out of one person who doesn't go there, 1 million will go there. And that's the likelihood of it. I mean, frankly, you know, so when people get into euthanasia arguments, I'm just like, you think you're helping them? You know, and you think, I mean, the odds that in 30 seconds after you put them out of their misery, they will be in a hell realm ripping someone's face off or being ripped, their face ripped off, is about 1 million to 1. So it's very serious. You know, and as you die, you get a premonition of it. You feel it. You sense it. And I think that's why subconsciously people who don't want to die, I think that's why we deny it so strongly, and that we fight it so strongly. I think subconsciously you're aware that you've been there many times, and that it's very likely you could go back. And you just don't want to, you know, and so you deny it, you know. Okay, number 3. Oh, so Nyawa means hell. Dra means the roar of the hells. Tupa means to hear it, yeah. It helps a lot. The true attitude helps a lot. The words don't do anything, okay. He said that taking refuge helps. They say taking refuge stops the doors to the hells. If you take it sincerely, yeah, it would stop the doors to hell. If you see emptiness directly, no problem. Never again. Totally, absolutely, guaranteed, higher realm, perfect, beautiful lives, 7 more than enlightenment. You know, if you take these classes seriously, if you study especially emptiness seriously, if you learn to meditate well, if you undertake either the open or the secret practices for seeing emptiness directly, you don't have to worry about it at all, never again. And you perceive that directly. You see your future. Very cool, if you could get there. With the right training, anyone in this room could get to that. If you try hard. If you try seriously, you can reach that. Say, Drakpe, Mitang, Luke, Drakpe, Mitang, Luke. Drakpe means out of terror. You know, you hear this thing. You have a premonition of what's going to happen. You actually get some kind of premonition of the sound of where you're going. Drakpe. Mitsang means poo-poo. Shit. Okay? Mitsang means shit. And lu means your body. Gu means you smear it all over your body. Meaning, you're so frightened that you just automatically defecate, okay, at that moment. It's so frightening to hear that you just uncontrollably defecate at that moment. Okay. And then people tell me, you know, after 3-hour lecture, they're going to do poa at that moment. It's not fair to those people to say that. It's not fair to tell someone that. By the way, I don't mean to say it's impossible. I mean, poa is a practice. It's an important practice. You can do it. It takes years and years of training. It takes years and years of practice. And you should learn how to do it. And it is very important to do. But it's an extremely difficult practice, and it takes a lot of training. But I don't mean to say it doesn't. It does work. There is such a thing. But it would take years of dedicated effort, like in retreat or something, to learn to do it. Okay. Say, Nyepargyur. Nyepargyur. Nyepargyur means you get totally insane. okay? At the moment of death, you lose your ability to think clearly. This is partly due to the destruction of what you would call brain cells, okay? The physical support for the brain starts to break down. The synapses start to break down, which is not the mind, but it supports the mind. And as the synapses break down, there's a lot of, I think you would call it in the West, like explosions of electricity in the mind. And they cause a lot of hallucinations. So as you start to die, especially after you look like you're dead, but you're still alive in your own brain, you start to go into some heavy hallucinations. And you start to become insane. For all intents and purposes, you're insane. You cannot think a straight thought. It's impossible. Because the physical basis for the mind has collapsed and is collapsing. So to think you're going to have a straight thought as you die, or that you'd be able to direct your thoughts without intense long-term training is not, it's crazy. You will go, for all intents and purposes, at the moment of death, you become insane. You can't think straight. And those are the four, those are Master Shantideva's argument for wake up, don't kid yourself. If you're going to do it now. Okay? If you're going to do something, do it now. You've got X number of hours, X number of months and years to get to your Buddha paradise before the shit hits the fan. You know? So take care of things now. You know, don't wait for some last moment thing. You're not going to be able to do it. It don't work that way. You won't be able to do anything then. That's all he wants to say. That's the main point. Yeah. All right. Next one. I'm sorry we're running a little late. Okay. It was your quizzes, not me.
Contemplation number 8. Examine your expectations. You set your hopes on results, unwilling to make any effort. Sufferings shower down on those least able to bear them. Already in the kiss of death, you imagine yourself an immortal and cry out when sufferings come to destroy you. You give up the highest kind of pleasure, the holy Dharma, infinite number of causes that bring you pleasure. Why is it you are attracted so much to being distracted by causes for pain, to busyness and the like?
Okay, this is the last contemplation. That's the last part of the class. Master Shantideva mentions, I think you could call it the role of expectation as you die. Okay, the role of expectations as you die. And he mentions three expectations that people live with. You know, three expectations that people always live with. Presuppositions that people live with. Presumptions. First one is this. Debu, Dewa, Topa. Okay, there's just a few Tibetan here. Gela means good deeds, okay? About good deeds. Tsin Man means you don't make any effort. You're not trying to make any efforts. You're not spending your life working on your good deeds. Debu means result. Dewa means happiness. Topa means you get it. What it means is, all human beings, according to Master Shantideva, are living under the presupposition or their expectation that something good is going to happen to them. Unreasonably so. Because they haven't done anything to deserve it. Okay, you know, like everybody in the world is thinking, I hope I get money. I hope I get friends. I hope I have a good life. You know, I hope everything works out okay. I hope I die nicely. But you didn't do anything to make it happen. So what do you expect? You're saying you're crazy. You know, it's like you're expecting something to happen without doing anything to make it happen. He says if you really examine your life, what are you doing that's so wonderful that you should expect those things to happen? You're crazy. You know, you haven't done anything of the things that are necessary to make yourself happy. You know, you're not doing the things that karmically make people happy. You're not caring about other people. You're not doing virtuous things. You're not meditating a lot. You're not going into retreats. You're not studying well. You're not thinking about Buddhism a lot. You're not thinking about virtue. And you're still sitting there thinking that everything's going to be all right. And that everything's going to turn out fine. And that somehow, of all the people in the world, you're going to die okay. Why? Well, this is an unreasonable expectation. You know, you have this in the back of your mind, you're thinking, I'm not such a bad person, you know. Other people, I don't know. But personally, I haven't been so bad. And those horrible things won't happen to me. They happen to other people. I mean, in the back of your mind, this is an expectation or a supposition that you make. Master Shantideva says, based on what? You know, what did you do that was so cool? Could you write down for 3 days the things you're doing in your life? Make a list of the things you're doing in your life and show me what's so virtuous about it? And why are you going to be different from the other oxen who go to the slaughterhouse? You know, what do you expect? You're not doing anything. You're not doing anything special. Where does this expectation come from that everything's going to be okay in your life? Or that maybe you're going to be happy? And that you're going to die well? He says it's illogical. It doesn't make any sense to expect that because you're not doing anything special. Sweetly, and you get into it and you get turned on by it, you can expect those things and they do come, and it's quite nice when they do come because you're just like, oh yeah, I collected those causes. And it's coming right on time, you know. And, you know, I'm having all these extraordinary experiences, just like they said, you know. And you can actually do the opposite. You know, you can plan it. You can plan your future paradise. And, two more. This is another presupposition or expectation that people have. Say, Phanda, Yuring, Sundu. Very well. Don't fall asleep yet, okay? Handa, Yuring, Sundu, Rewa. Handa, in this case, Sla means an immortal, a god, an immortal god. Handa means like an immortal. Yuring means a long time, long, long time. Yuring means a long, long time. Sundu means you're going to live for a long, long time. Sundu means live. Rewa means you expect that. You know, everybody in this room, in the back of their mind is thinking, when I talked about people around you dying, you said, in the back of your mind, deep in your heart, you're thinking, not me. You know, maybe those other guys, not me, you know. But if you think about it, there will be the first person in the room who dies. You know, someday, the day will come when we sit around and you say, you remember that guy that was in class? You know, he died yesterday? Really bad, you know. It's terrible. There will be the first one. And then there'll be the second one. And then there'll be the third one. And then there'll be the last three people who are still alive. And they'll say, God, you remember those classes back in 97? There were all these people there. There's like 85 people there, you know. And there's only three left. There's only us three left. There will come a time. And there'll come a time when no one remembers a single class here. They'll all be dead. Dead and gone, you know. And nobody will even remember these classes were ever held. There'll come a time, you know. And that's the way we are. So on what basis do you think that you're still going to be around for a while? You know, why in the back of your mind are you assuming that you're going to live for a while? It's unreasonable. Okay, it's unreasonable expectation. And Master Shantideva is saying these three expectations, we got to number two, right? They're what make you suffer so greatly at death. Because then you see it was all wrong. You know, as you die, you get this sudden knowledge that you had these three suppositions, that you were not so bad, and you were going to live a while longer, and then suddenly they're all exploded. You know, suddenly it's obvious that you're going to die right now. And then those expectations you had, they cause you more suffering than before. If you didn't have those expectations, you wouldn't suffer so badly as you die. Okay, last one and then we're done. Dunya Mang. Senchung. Dunya Mang. Senchung is a difficult word in Tibetan, but it means little ability to withstand pain. I don't know what you call that in English. Sen means the ability to withstand pain. You know, I don't know what you call it. The ability to put up with suffering. The ability, specifically the ability to bear when you are hurting. You know, to endure pain, the ability to endure pain is called sen. Sen chung means that ability, as you get older, starts to dissolve. You know, the older you get, the less able you are to put up with pain. Okay? The longer you live normally, you get less and less able to withstand pain and to put up with problems in your life and to put up with unexpected problems like that. The older you get, the more your mind fossilizes? Something like that. Ossifies. And you literally become less able to handle change, less able to handle ambiguity, less able to handle pain. And the longer you live, the worse it gets. Until when you get to be old, you can't stand anything. You know, you can't go outside in a slight breeze because you might catch cold. You can't stand it if it's a little too cold. You can't stand it if it's a little too hot. Somebody puts a little too much spice in the food, you get sick. Your whole body is sen chung. Sen chung means your whole body and your whole mind starts to become less and less capable of withstanding pain. And don't think you're different. You know, everybody in the room thinking, yeah, but I'm a little smarter than that. Forget it. You know, Chijan Rinpoche, these great lamas, when they get older, you start to get affected like that. You know, you do get weaker and weaker, and smaller things start to hurt more and more. Okay, even just to sit on a chair. I mean, I know older people who say just to sit on a chair is great suffering for them, but that's the best thing they can do because everything else hurts worse. Dungel means sufferings, Mung means many. Okay, as you get older, your ability to withstand sufferings is less, and everything hurts more. And he says that's a third condition that makes death worse and worse. So every year that goes by, you are more affected by death. Okay, if you die young, apparently it's a little less painful than if you die old, because you're much more sensitive to pain by the time you're that age. Okay. So three reasons why to die is so much suffering. One is, in the back of your mind, you thought you weren't that bad, that you were pretty good. Number two, in the back of your mind, you thought you were going to live a little longer, a long time. Number three, your natural ability to withstand pain as the years go by gets less and less, and the death gets more and more painful. Last question on your homework is, how does Master Shantideva describe our priorities and perception of what is happiness? And in the root text, which you are not going to get tonight because, you know, we stayed up, we slept 1 hour last night and couldn't finish it. He says the Dharma is the ultimate source of happiness. Okay. Just meditating, doing retreats, studying, controlling your own mind, keeping your watch of your vows, you know, carefully tracking, am I keeping my vows today, am I doing well in my vows? That is the source, the real source of happiness. He says, and people push that away. The real thing that can bring them happiness, they push away, and they go after all these other things. And he makes a list. He says, doing bad deeds to get what you want. Can I close this diamond deal tomorrow if I charge the guy tax? You know, or will he back out? Seriously, I mean, it seriously came into my mind, and I'm like, what's wrong with you? it's a bad deed. You think it's going to make money or something. Forget it. It's a source of suffering. This is actually a source of suffering. To lie, to cheat, to hurt someone, is going to actually cause you pain. It's not going to make you any money. Okay. Number two, called Dunzi. Dunzi, you have to study. Dunzi means New York City hustle and bustle. Hustle and bustle. Like you're attracted to it. It's like sophisticated. It's like stimulating, okay? And actually it's going to cause you suffering. It makes your mind busy. It doesn't allow you to meditate properly. Being around too much stimulation is destructive to your practice. And he's saying, and instead of realizing that, you go after it. You're attracted to it. Third thing is called gopa. Gopa means the tendency of your mind to skip from object to object. Like, I like this, I like this, I want to do this, I want to learn this, I want to do this. Oh, now I want to do this. No, I want to do this now. Oh, I'd rather do that. You know, and then your mind keeps going, you know, boom, 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 like a fly, and landing on different things. That's called gopa. He says those three tendencies to think those three things are happiness, busyness in your mind, to live in what you call stimulating place, and then the third one of doing bad deeds because you think you're going to get something good out of it, are all lies. He says those are the three lies of happiness. They look like happiness. They're lying to you. And instead of embracing what really brings you happiness, which is your practice, you reject it and you go after those other things. And that's what the last verse was about. Okay? Okay, we'll do some prayers. So you will get a homework and you'll get the reading on Thursday. Unless I die tomorrow. Okay. Or tonight.
Sāshē bhagyē chōshē mēdō tāṁ rīrā līṅshē nyendē gyāmbāndī sāṅgyē shīṅdō mēdē rūvākī tōgū nāṅdā shīṅlā chūpāshō Idam Guru Ratnamendala Kamniya Dayami Gyawadi Gyokun Sunam Yeshe Tsukdokshi Sunam Yeshe Lejongwe Namba Kunye Dupa Shou